Okay, so we're beginning Perek Zion, chapter 7. We left off, the end of Perek Vav, that Gidon had once again asked for another sign, which we got into, the sign about the dew, and we discussed different possibilities for what he was looking for. Perhaps whether the salvation would come through his merit, whether he had enough merit to bring about the salvation, whether he didn't, whether it would be miraculous, different possibilities. And now, Perek Zion basically begins the actual battle portion of the story. The Pasuk Aleph, Vayashkem Yerubaal, hu Gidon, and Yerubaal, who is Gidon, got up, the Cholaam Asher Ito, and the whole nation that was with him. Vayashkem usually connotes that he arose early. Vayachanu al Ein Charod, and they camped in this place, Ein Charod. Umachane Midyan Hayog al Mitzafon, and the camp of Midyan was to the north, Migivas Hamore, the north of this place, Givas Hamore, Boemek, which apparently was in a valley. So we have just the setup here. We have Gidon and his troops camping this place, Ein Charod. We have Machane Midyan to the north of them, Migivas Hamore, which some of us understand to mean the distance of how far they extended, that their armies began from Givas Hamore and went, I guess, all the way to just north of where Gidon was camped. And Ba'emek either is understood as to be the place where that they were, the Machane Midyan was camped in the Emek, in the valley, or Givas Hamore was a place that you could see into the valley. The Givas Hamore Ba'emek, that Givas Hamore had a view of this valley, and I suppose it's not clear to me actually who was camped in this place they had the view. This is Rashi's shot. I suppose it was the Midianim that were in this position that he could see into the valley. It's not clear to me if Gidon was in that valley that they were seeing into or not. That was the basic setup. You had Gidon and his army in Ein Charod, and you had the camp of Midian to the north in Givas Hamore, or extending all the way to Givas Hamore. Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Hashem el Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, Rava Am Asher Itach, the nation that is with you is great. You have too many people with you. Mitisias Midyan biyadam, for me to give Midyan over into your hands. Can yispa'er ala Yisrael lemor, lest the people of Israel yispa'er, they glorify themselves, they become arrogant to say, Yadi Hoshi'ali, it was my hand that saved me. Reminiscent of the pasuk that discusses that when we come to Eretz Yisrael, that when we conquer the land and we become comfortable, and the pasuk says that lest you say that Kochi Veotzem Yadi Yasli Yasachayel Azel is my strength that got me this Zacharta Hashem Elokecha, you should remember Hashem your God. So Hashem doesn't want this to occur, that they would have a victory and assume that it was by their own might. And so Hashem says, 10,000 men, that's too many. We have to whittle it down a little bit so that it's clear that it is that this victory will be in fact miraculous.
I think they had 32,000.
32,000? Okay, at some point there was 10. But
10 remaining.
Okay, and then they're going to whittle that down also. Okay, thank you. So right, okay, right. That's going to work in the math in the next topic. It's interesting because in Yehoshua, so back in Perek Ches, of Yehoshua, Perek Chet, Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Sorry, Perek Chet, Pasuk Aleph. The beginning of Perek Chet. When they're going to attack Ai, so by Yomer Esmel Yeshua, fear of Al Techas, do not fear. Kach imchas kol am hamilchama. Take with you the entire nation. And there's no, you don't have any of this whittling down over there. Hashem says, take the entire troop. And
different
here,
generation.
What's that?
Different
yeah,
generation.
Absolutely. So that's the idea. First of all, I guess right, you're saying on a very simple level, I think, is what you mean, that there wasn't this fear that they would, you know, win a victory and assume that it was purely by our hands.
They were more religious. They were former.
Yeah. So that's probably the most simple approach. And even along the same lines, I saw they brought down in the Mishpat Zav, he brings from the Min Pukhtara that the idea of having a large troop, when, you know, Hashem's fighting the battle anyways, but you'll have extra merit there, right? You'll have more zechus, the more, right? The same thing, bro, bam, hadras, malach, that it's a greater merit to have a large, daven with a minyan, with a large troop, that you have the merits of all the people combined. That's a greater glory for the king, but you have the combined merits of all the people. So he says, so that was very good in the time of Yoshua, where they were meritorious, they were tzaddikim. But here, we have a generation that has fallen into the depths of idol worship, etc. They didn't have zechusim, and to gather them together would not be a benefit in that way. There wouldn't be extra zechus for them, and maybe it would even be counterintuitive, right? It would work the opposite, that the more people maybe would be worse. That more Rishayim Hashem wouldn't perform a miracle for those Rishayim, so whittle it down. We'll see that part of this whittling down is also to separate the more righteous from the less.
Yeah, but they were going to win anyway.
Yeah.
Hashem said that they were going to win and glorify themselves.
You mean, lest that happen, you're saying that they would have won.
That's the only reason he would have said that.
Right. Right, that's the play with mind games. They would have won, right.
By the way, something similar happened after the Six-Day War in Israel. I was a teenager at the time. I was 17. And I remember people were going nuts with self-glorification of the Israeli army. And because you know what happened 6 years later.
I've heard about that.
So. It was a terrible self-glorification. It was understandable. I mean, it was 40 years of complete misery on Israel, and all of a sudden this burst of joy. So I've been alive at that time. That's the high point of my life, actually. Downhill from age 17.
Pasuk Gimel, the Atah, and now Hashem says to Gidon, Krana be'aznei ha'am lemar, call out in the ears of the nation, saying, Miyare v'chared, he who is fearful and trembling, Yashob v'yitzbor mehara gilad, he should return, and he should be yitzbor from Hara Gilad. For now, maybe we'll take, I think, what Rashi's approach, Yitzbor, from the word Safra, which means it's an Aramaic word meaning morning, the morning, Boker. So, Yashel the Yitzbor, he should return, he should get up early in the morning to abandon the battle. By leaving in the morning, people would still be sleeping. He wouldn't be embarrassed. And this is the stuff it says. Whoever was fearful could leave then. By Yashoming Aam Esrim Ushnayim Elef, and 22,000 people left, returned. Baseres Alafim Nisaru, and 10,000 10,000 remain. We'll keep going a little bit. We'll come back and discuss the Psukim once we have an overall picture. Pasuk Dalad, Vayomer Hashem al Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, Od Ha'am Rav, 10,000? Too many still. Horeid Osam el Amayim, bring them down to the water, Ve'etrefenu l'chasam, and I will refine them some more over there. Refine, Siruf is to refine, like how you refine silver, remove the,
put in
the impurity. The Haya Asher Omar Elecha Zeh Yelech Itach, and it will be that the ones that I say to you, this to go with you, then who Yelech Itach, then indeed he will go with you, walk with you to war. The Chol Asher Omar Elecha Zeh Lo Yelech Imach, who go Yelech. And all the ones about whom I say he shouldn't go, then he shouldn't go. Pasuk Hey, Vayored Esa'am El Amayim, and he brought the nation down to the water. Vayomer Hashem al Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, Kol Asher Yolok Bilshono Min Hamayim, all who slurp from the water with their tongues, Kasher Yolok HaKelev, just as a dog would slurp, Bilshono Tatsig Osolevad, you should separate them on their own, and those will be the ones that actually come. And all who bow on their knees to drink, those are the ones that you should not take with you. Again, well, what's that?
Because they're too delicate?
That is one approach. We'll see the different approaches shortly. And it was the number of people who slurped with their hands to their mouths, that was 300. V'chol yeser ha'am, and the rest of the nation, karu al birkeim lishtos mayim, they bent on their knees to drink from the water. And we'll just do pasuk zayin, vayomer Hashem al Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, v'shlosh meos ha'ish ha'malakikim oshia eschem, with the 300 men who drank, I will save you, v'nasatis midyon b'yadecha, and I will place midyon in your hand, and the rest of the nation will each return to his place, to his home. So, before we see any Mepharshim, just in the simple reading of the Psukim, we have two purgings of, two refinements of the army. First, it's just a seemingly a voluntary leave that Gidon says whoever is fearful should leave, and 22,000 leave, there's 10,000 remaining, and then they have this exercise of drinking from the water, and those who bring the water to their mouths are allowed to stay, and those who bend down to drink straight from the water are sent off. So what's going on here? So I'm going to go a little bit out of order, but I'll start with Pasuk Hey, where we have this seemingly inexplicable difference between those who bring the water to their mouths, those who bend. What is the significance of each one? So there's three approaches that I saw. The first one is Chazal's approach, the drush of the pasuk, and that is that the ones who bowed, that was the indication that they were used to bowing to Avodah Zarah, and so the ones who brought the water to them, they didn't bow. Those were the ones that he wanted to keep, but the ones who bowed, and they were used to bowing that way, to bow or to whatever, to go to Zara, so that showed that they had not purged that that impulse, and were not worthy to have a miracle performed for them.
But that doesn't make sense, and I'll tell you, I know that's a strong thing I just said, but it really doesn't make sense
to you.
To me. Because in those days, that was also the means of worshiping HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the bow? We only stopped bowing after the Romans expelled us and Am Yisrael ended up in Europe.
So you're asking Akasha. You're saying that...
It's not a distinction.
It's not a distinction. That wasn't necessarily specific to Avodah Zarah. In those days, everybody would bow when serving HaKadosh Baruch. I'm not sure. I guess I'd have to look into who and when.
Was
it the Beis HaMikdash? Was it... So, okay. So that may be specific to the Beis HaMikdash. I don't know. I'm not sure. I hear the question. We have to verify the basis of it.
We were Rebbeim in Europe who advocated that when you go back to Eretz Yisrael, you should resume bowing. Prostrating yourself.
Anywhere.
No. In Eretz Yisrael.
No, I'm saying anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, or specifically on Har HaBayis, or...
Anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. They were Rebbeim. They advocated that and to bring back the ancient custom. And to this day, the Samaritans prostrate themselves. Because they never left. I know, I was in one of their shuls.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
okay.
All right, point made. Writer. Sorry I interrupted you, Rabbi.
No problem. It's a good question. Let me see where this is coming from. So I have to see if it's Rashi brings it. I said it was a Chazal. I'm not 100% sure that it is. There's a different Chazal that they were bowing. I think Chazal learned in the Medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni that they were bowing. There's a fourth Chazal, so I didn't count it. I think they were bowing to their reflection.
Uh-huh.
The Medrash says that. Not right page. Or is the Medrash?
I have a footnote here.
According
to Akedah, they were disqualified because they lacked the self-respect to avoid rushing headlong into the water. Men without such self-discipline would likely not have had the strength character to resist the social pressure that worship idols. That's the Akedah.
Okay. So that's another pshat, that they didn't have... They rushed to the water, so they didn't have the self-respect or self-restraint that would be necessary for what? He's saying it's to restrain
to
from
Avodah
Zarah?
To withstand idol worship.
Okay, so that was an indication that they were idol worshippers.
No, but they didn't have the strength of character to withstand social pressure to become such.
When? After the war?
It's not clear.
Okay, so either he means that therefore they must have already been, or because it's in their future, then for some reason that disqualifies them. Others, the more pshat approach, the Rabag learns that those who brought the water to them were stronger, those who bent was an indication of laziness, going to the water, and we'll have to understand, based on the Rabag, what was the first purging? What happened the first time when he said, whoever is fearful, if again we're, if we seem to be separating out the weak, what was going on in the first step?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step, the Malbim, that, again, it's a sign of weakness. If you need to drink a lot at one time, you need to put your head in, drink a lot rather than cup some and drink a little bit at a time. Those who had to bow and drink a lot of water, that was some sign of weakness or need to fulfill their taiva. You mentioned bulmos, which I think is some kind of sickness. So those were the weaker ones, the ones who bowed. And again, but the stronger ones who brought the water to them, they were fit to remain in the ark.
By the way, they would have used only one hand.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
Why?
How? Williams just split that?
Go like this.
Oh, okay.
But they would never have used two hands.
Why?
Because in ancient times, the Semites used their left hand for...
Other things.
To wipe themselves.
Right.
They had no toilet. Right, so they used their hands. That's why to this day, an Arab will never eat with his left hand.
Gotcha.
Ever. There was once an issue of National Geographic which they showed a group of Arabs dipping pita bread into a communal plate of hummus or tahini or something. And the person who put the picture into the magazine reversed the image. So it shows them all dipping with their left hand. And the screams from the Arab community, National Geographic had to apologize for that.
Very interesting. That's good. So what was going on in the first step then? So here we have in the second step here by the water, we're purging either the, either according to Rashi, and the Medrash, the Obdei Avodah Zarah, the Akedah seemingly, and according to the Ralbag and the Malbim, we are purging the weak. The Malbim does also acknowledge the other Pshat, and he seems to go with that in the earlier Pesukim. The Malbim, back in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, so it says, V'yata now, krana be'oznei ha'am le'mar, call out to the nation, saying, Yare v'chare v'yashov v'yitzpor mehar ha'gilad. He was afraid to return and be yitzpor mehar ha'gilad. So I mentioned before that the Rashi understands yitzpor to mean get up early in the morning to desert, to leave. The Malbim explains that yitzpor comes from the word tzipar, like a bird. What's that?
To take flight.
So actually he learns that not take flight and abandon the camp, but rather they should, those who are fearful should leave, but not that they should return to their home. They should go. Gideon knew that soon there would be a victory and the enemies would flee. And I think what we're going to see later is there was a troop from the Jewish army waiting in the wing to ambush the fleeing Midianites. He says these were the people who were there to ambush them. Like he told them, if you're afraid to go into battle, you know, head first, you know, in the front line, so wait on, go, you know, to this place, to Har HaGilad. Yitzpor mehar ha'gilad. You should go to Har HaGilad and you should swoop in like a bird when the time comes to catch the fleeing Midianites.
Got it. Interesting.
He also points out that there's a difference between this group, where it doesn't actually say that he told them to return to their home, as opposed to the next group. At the end, Pasuk Zayin, it says, "Becholam yelchu ish l'mekomo." Each man should go to his home. The second group, those were the. Here he's going with the approach that they were purging the Ovdei Avodah Zarah by the water. That the second group, he was saying that you should go home because you're not going to be involved in this at all. In fact, he's medayik that in Pasuk Beis, in verse 2. Sorry to run you all over the place here.
Right.
He says, "Ayomer Hashem el Gidon, Rav Am Asher Itach." The nation that's with you is too many. Asher Itach, that is with you. And in Pasuk Dalid, Hashem says, "Od Ha'am Rav." The nation is too great, but not Asher Itach. It doesn't say the nation that is with you. So it could be, you could say very simply that I already said it. I don't know why I needed to say it the first time, but it doesn't say Asher Yitzchak. Malbim says there's a difference. There were the ones who were with him and the ones who weren't with him. The first group, they may have been fearful, but they were not, or they may have even been fearful of the Averis that they had, which we'll talk about shortly, but they weren't the real Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the real Rishayim. They would be considered in Pasuk Beis, Asher Yitach, the nation that's with you. As opposed to here in Pasuk Daled, where we're purging the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so that's Oda Amrav, the nation's still great. They, not the nation that's Yitach, not the nation with you, they're not with you. There's people here who are not with you. There are people here who are, who serve idols, who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And those ones would need to be sent all the way home. So, we have to understand, in the context of the Torah's commandment of what to do when you go to battle, what is going on here, going back again to the first step of purging, where Hashem commands Sidon, call out in the ears of the people saying, he who is fearful and trembling should return. Torah in Parshat Shoftim, believe it or not, in Parshat Shoftim, we have right the commandment, when you go out to war against your enemy and you see a great nation, Amrav, don't be afraid, Hashem is with you. And it says that the Kohen should approach and he should say, don't be afraid. And then the Shotrim speak up. And first the Shotrim say, whoever built the house and hasn't dedicated it yet can return home. Whoever planted a vineyard didn't take the first fruit to your Yerushalayim of the fourth year, the Netzer Rivai should return home. The Arla should return home. And whoever has become engaged to a woman and didn't marry her yet should return home, or could return home. And then, in Pasuk Ches, Perek Chaf Pasuk Ches, Sefer Dvarim, V'yosvu HaShotrim L'daber Ala'am. And the Shotrim, the officers, should continue to speak to the nation. The Amru, and they should say, Miha'ish HaYare V'rach HaLevav, whoever is fearful and stop the part, Yelech V'yosvu Leveso, he should go and return to his house. V'go Yimas Eslevav Echav Shilvavu, he shouldn't dissolve or melt his, instill fear in the hearts of his brothers who are with him. So it's mefurash, it's explicit in the Torah, that before going to war, you tell the people whoever is fearful should return home. So based on this, we can ask, Mishpat Zav asks, that if it's the explicit pasuk in the Torah, then why did Hashem have to command Gidon over here to do this? It's explicit. Why does he need a second command? What was unique about this situation that he wouldn't have followed the standard procedure of a Jewish leader taking the people into battle? Pasuk Gimel, we see Hashem says, now, you should call to them saying, whoever is afraid should return. Why did he need a specific command for that if it's already commanded in the Torah? I'm not even sure if this part was the Kohen saying it, because it says that the Kohen should come forward and he should speak to the nation and he should say, Shema Yisrael, listen, you're coming close to war, etc. And then he says Hashem is going to walk with you and save you. And then it says in Pasuk Hey, after that, the Dibru HaShotrim Ala Amlemar, and the officers should speak to the nation saying. So I'm not sure if it was a Kohen anymore, necessarily, who had to be the one to... The first part was done by the Kohen HaMashiach. He was a special Kohen appointed to this position. The second declaration could be that it would be a Kohen. Doesn't seem to be necessary. Perhaps, not sure. So, we first have to understand, what does it mean? What is the Torah? Who's the Torah referring to when it says that one who is Yarev Erach Aleva, one who is afraid, stopped apart, should return home? So, we have a Mishnah in Sota that discusses this pasuk. I think Rashi and Chumash bring this down, these two approaches. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says, Hayarev Erach Aleva of Kimashmo. It's Kimashmo, it's as it says. If you're afraid, you're afraid of war. He's not able to stand in the Kisri HaMelchama, in the knots of war when it gets really close, and see a drawn sword. He's not able to stand that. He's afraid. That's who has to go home. Rabbi Yossi HaGalili Omer. Rabbi Yossi HaGalili says, Hayarev Erach Alevav. Who does it refer to? The Yare, the fear, the one who is afraid? Zelam is Yare min Avera Shebiyada. It's someone who is afraid of his Avera. He's afraid that he won't deserve to be saved in battle. And he adds, Lefikach Tosa La Torah Eskol Elo Shiyachra Biglavon. And therefore, the Torah gave you all these options to return for. The guy who planted, who built the house doesn't really need to return. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Those guys, okay, they could. They don't really need to. Those are just cover-ups for the person who is afraid of his Avera, so he won't be embarrassed, and he, everybody will return at the same time, and you won't know why each person's leaving. That's Rabbi Yossi Aglili's approach. And then you have Rabbi Yossi, different Rabbi Yossi, who just basically says the same idea, but he seems to hold that you can only return for averos that are de'oraisa, that if you transgress biblical commandments, as opposed to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who even a sin on a rabbinic level, a transgression of a rabbinic commandment, would warrant returning from battle. So, then the Mishnah continues, and it says, when is this true that those who are fearful can return from battle? That's only for optional war. If it's a milchamas mitzvah, it's a battle that's a mitzvah, everybody goes. Even a chasan from his anakala. Guess I'm not sure. See, they already had kalas going to war. Not a new thing that the women want to go to battle. See, the Mishnah says, "Afilu chasan mechadaro v'kala mechupasa." Okay. And Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing, seemingly. Switches the words a little bit. So the first opinion said that it's for a milchamas rishus that you go, but for a milchamas mitzvah, a milchamas harishus, an optional battle, that's where people can go home if they don't want to go to battle. And a milchamas mitzvah, a war that's for a mitzvah, conquering Eretz Yisrael, for example, for that, everybody has to go. There's no option to return home. And Rabbi Yehuda says, No, it's the milchamas mitzvah that you have the option of returning home. But if it's an obligatory battle, then everybody goes out. The first opinion distinguished between optional and mitzvah. The second opinion distinguishes between mitzvah and obligation, which we'll have to see what that means. So the Gemara says, what is this dispute? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rishus d'Rabbanan zui mitzvah d'Rabbi Yehuda. Mitzvah d'Rabbanan zui chovah d'Rabbi Yehuda. Really, their argument is very, very specific here. It's very subtle. Really, when the Rabbanan said that you can return only for a milchemes reshus, for an optional war. That's when people who are afraid can go home. And when Rav Yehuda said that you can only return for a milchama that's a mitzvah, they were both saying the same thing. And when the Rabbanan said that the one that you're not allowed to return for is a milchemes mitzvah, and when Rav Yehuda said that the one that you're not allowed to return for is a milchemes chova, an obligation, an obligatory battle, they were also saying the same thing.
Makes more sense.
So what were they arguing about? So they were arguing, says the Gemara, about a specific situation of war. To prevent a Gentile army from coming upon you. That's where they're disputing. That mar kari la mitzvah, umar kari rishon. One of them calls it a mitzvah, and one of them calls it an optional battle. Meaning, I actually skipped a line in the Gemara, that's helpful. It says, if it's a war that's Yoshua conquering Eretz Yisrael, that everybody agrees. Some might call it a Mohammed mitzvah, some might call it a Mohammed chova. They really agree to what it is. It's a mitzvah and it's an obligation, and you're not allowed to return, you can't desert that battle. If it is like the Milchamos, the wars that David fought to expand the borders of Eretz Yisrael, that, you could call it a mitzvah, you could call it a reshush, and optionally you call it a mitzvah. Everybody agrees, though, that for that, you are allowed to desert, if you're afraid or whatever, if you plant a vineyard, whatever your situation is. The only situation that they're arguing is this situation to prevent Dayim from coming in, from entering, from Reishi Alayim, from coming upon you. That's where they have their argument. So, and the dispute is as follows, that Rebbe, probably complicated for you listening, it's complicated for me just reading it, but try to make it clear. The Rabbanan had said in the Mishnah that for a reshus, you are allowed to desert. For a mitzvah, you are not allowed to desert. So, what do they consider this type of situation where there's a threatening army? Is that, yes. What do they consider that situation? So, the Rabbanan only consider that situation a mitzvah, but they still hold that it's a mitzvah just in terms of the idea that osek the mitzvah patur mitzvah. If you're involved in this mitzvah, then you're exempt from other mitzvahs. But it's not on the level that of like a obligatory war where you're not allowed to desert. Really, in terms of as a battle, it has the same status as an optional war where you're just expanding your borders.
Why would that be so? I mean, after all, here you're defending Israel, by definition. You're not defending the land that, the extra lands that the Hamelech conquered. So why should that be so?
So that's a good question. I think in a moment we'll have somewhat of an answer to that question. When we see how the Rambam approached this opinion of the Rabbanan. And just to say, the other side is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that this type of situation is a chova. It's an obligation to go to war, and you wouldn't be allowed to desert even in this type of situation. Okay. So the Rambam when he we passing like the Rabbanan, like the first opinion, that type of situation to prevent Ovdei Kochavim, prevent the Gentile army from invading is a mitzvah, it's not a chovah, you would be allowed to desert the battle. That's how we pass. That comes out from the Rambam. But still, with the Rambam, in bringing down these mitzvot, so the Rambam says, he's talking about the order of wars that a king should fight, and he says, a king should first fight the Milchamas mitzvah, right? The mitzvah wars. And he says, what is a Milchamas mitzvah? What's included in that? He says, Milchamas Shiva Amamim, a battle against the seven Canaanite nations, for Milchamas Amalek, and fighting against Amalek, the Ezras Yisrael Miyad Tsar Sheba Aleihem. And he lists assisting Israel, fighting on behalf of Israel against a invading army. And then you should fight, he says, the optional battle. Now, without getting into the full diuk, the Mefarshim are bothered with the Rambam for his use of the term Milchames Mitzvah instead of Milchames Chovah, obligatory. And because the Mishnah asks us on the Rambam, why does he call it a Milchames Mitzvah, not a Milchames Chovah? Right? Fighting the seven nations is an obligation. So the Lechem Mishnah, commentary on the Rambam, says that it's not a question. The reason why the Rambam talks about mitzvah and not chovah is because he paskins like the Rabbanan. And according to the Rabbanan, there's no difference between mitzvah and chovah. There is no difference. There's only one situation. As he says it.
There's only
two choices. Either that you don't have, according to the Rabbanan, let me get this clear. I'm really confusing myself here. Sorry. I think I have to take a step back. I explained something incorrectly before, and that's why I'm getting confused. The Rabbanan used two terms in the Mishnah. The Rabbanan said there's a war that's a reshus, and there's a war that's a mitzvah. And that's it. Because they do not hold of an in-between stage where it's a reshus, but it's also a mitzvah that you have osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Rabbi Yehuda has these three stages. There's the ones where you're obligated to fight, like conquering Eretz Yisrael. And those are obligations. That's chovah. And then there's the mitzvos, there's the milchamos that are for sure optional, like expanding the border. And then there's this in-between stage, which is called mitzvah. And that stage, this mitzvah stage, it's optional. You could desert if you don't feel up to it, but it's still a mitzvah to fight that battle, and you would have the halacha of osik the mitzvah, patraming a mitzvah. If you're involved in a mitzvah, you're exempt from a mitzvah. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The Rabbanan don't have that. The Rabbanan... The Rabbanan just have two stages. Either it's a mitzvah and an obligation, or it's not. And you could desert if you want. So therefore, there's no difference between mitzvah and chovah to them. Rabbi Yehuda had three stages. There's reshus, there's mitzvah, and there's chovah. The Rabbanan just have two stages. Mitzvah and not mitzvah. Or chovah and not chovah. The mitzvah and chovah are all intertwined. So he says that's why the Rambam didn't mention anything about chovah. He just called it all mitzvah, because it's all the same. Mitzvah, chovah is one and the same. He says, however, what I am bothered by is if we paskin like the Rabbanan, then when the Rambam gives the example of what is an optional battle, so the Rambam just says, He says after he fights the mitzvah battle, so he should fight the optional one. What are the examples of that? Hamilchama shemilchom im shara amim. It's a battle that you fight with the other nations. Kedei laharchiv gvul Yisrael, in order to expand the borders. Ulaharbos begdulaso v'shamo, and to increase our greatness and our name, etc. So the Nochem Mishnah's bothered, why doesn't he also mention this type of battle to prevent invading armies? Because according to the Rabbanan, that's not even a mitzvah, that's totally optional. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that was a mitzvah, that was osik a mitzvah, pachaming a mitzvah.
Why would that be optional?
Oh, so good. So here's where I think what's a little bit helpful to answer that question. I probably won't totally satisfy you, but somewhat. So the way he answers the question, and or part of what you see from here, is that there's a difference between an army that is actually invading and an army that is threatening to on the border. The Rambam says, as one of the risks, what is the Milchamas Mitzvah? Ezra Shizom Yadzar Shebalim, assisting, fighting for Israel against an enemy that's fighting them. He says that's the Milchamas Mitzvah, right? Now, nobody held in our Gemara that preventing them from coming in was a Milchamas Mitzvah. So, where's the Rambam getting that from? So he seems to be distinguishing between these two situations. That if they're attacking already, that's a Milchamas Mitzvah that you're not allowed to desert for. If they are not yet attacking, if they're just a threatening on the border, so that's what the Gemara was talking about. When it said that, I don't even know if there's, you know, how threatening they are. The words of the Gemara are to exclude them, to prevent them from coming upon you. So he seems to understand, the way the Lachem Mishnah seems to be explaining the Rambam, is that they're not even necessarily attacking right now. You're trying to prevent a future attack.
So these are manning defensive fortifications.
Exactly, basically. And he says that's what's included in the Rambam's words of Harbos Digdulaso Vishamo, to increase our greatness and our name, and that it's included in that you're really scaring them off, basically. There's a threat, a looming threat, and you go out to fight them to scare them off. He says that's where you have this machlokes. Are you involved in a mitzvah when you're doing that? You have osik the mitzvah, patroning a mitzvah, but nobody would consider that a milchemes chova, an obligatory battle, and you would be allowed to desert for that. However, a situation where they're already attacking, that the Rambam lists as a milchemes mitzvah. That's a milchemes mitzvah. That is a situation where you could not desert if you wanted to.
Right.
And in that case, you would not have the Kohen and the Shotrim coming to say whoever's afraid should desert. That's why Yido needed a specific command here, says the Mishnah Sozav, based on this Rambam. That's why there needed to be a specific command in our case. The Midianim were attacking. They were threatening. They were there. It was an imminent attack. They had already gathered their armies. They had crossed the Yarden. Here, it was a pure milchemes mitzvah. You would not have thought that you wouldn't have commanded the people to desert. That's why we have a special command that here, for this situation, I don't want a large army. I want it to be a clear miracle.
Got it. Thank you.